This is Maria with The Why, from Success to Startup Show, bringing you the whys of entrepreneurship on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com. Hello, welcome to Startup to Success. I have an extremely beautiful and very, very talented guest today, Kiana Naimi, who's an Iranian-American licensed clinical social worker who specializes in grief, loss, and trauma. Kiana has earned her master's in social welfare from UCLA at the Luskin School of Public Affairs. During her master's program, Kiana gained her experience working across the lifespan of human development in various settings. I cannot thank you enough for joining my show today, Kiana. I'm obsessed with the topics we're going to be discussing because these are things that people sometimes don't talk about or like to talk about. And I just can't wait to dive in. But before we dive in, I want to give you a chance to say hello.
Hello. It's so wonderful to be with you today. You're embarrassing me. I am blushing, literally. It's such an honor to get to talk to you and everyone on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. So, you might already know, I love to start with the why, right? Like, I'm reading your bio and I'm just like amazed at how much you've accomplished and all the work that you do. And I just want to start off with, you know, how did you figure out your why? Like, what journey, what's your story with your why? How did you figure it out?
So I like to joke and say the why found me, actually. But the whole reason why I ended up basing my private practice now in grief and loss is because of a loss that I've encountered growing up. So I lost my mom to cancer when I was 15. And that literally, I mean, a million years later, has shifted the way I practice and I see the world and I connect with individuals. And, you know, her loss or losing her literally became the reason why I ended up going into this work. And you know, you make lemonade out of lemons, and that's what I did. And it's, you know, to this day, I've been practicing for a little bit now, and to this day, every time I get it to sit into a session and hear, you know, why folks come and, you know, want to do the work that they want to do, it's just such an honor and privilege to be able to sit with them. So that's my why.
Wow. And, you know, I don't come across too many people that say that the why found me. I really find that extremely inspiring. And I actually took a note here while you were saying that because I'm obsessed with the why and people, you know, helping others and also myself to continuously refine my why and make sure it's in line with really why I'm here, my purpose and so on. But I'm mm-hmm. sorry about your mother. I actually lost my father to cancer 7 years ago. And it's the most excruciating, painful thing to go through when you have a healthy loved one. And then within months, you just see them just deflate and just, it's just awful. I don't want to get into it, but I could really see, and that transitioned my life too. It really helped me prioritize things differently and change the way I view things now, you know? And so, wow, that's pretty impressive. So tell me a little bit about, why don't we go through, let's define grief and loss a little bit for the audience, right? Because I think a lot of listeners might not have experienced it and they're like, what are you guys talking about? You know?
Well, if you haven't, for anyone who hasn't experienced it, I will say that it's an honor and a privilege to have not experienced it, right? It's such a blessing to not have been there. And so if I were to define grief, right? So grief is a series of emotional, cognitive, functional, or physical, and behavioral responses to a loss, right? So, you know, as a society, I feel like we are just obsessed with pathologizing everything, right? Oh, these are your symptoms. This is your diagnosis, right? And grief doesn't work that way because grief is a natural response to any significant loss or change in a relationship to a person, a place, an item, a memory, and attachment that has been removed or taken away from us, right? So we're not gonna say that, it's a problem to get rid of, and so again, it's not like, I don't know, you have the cold and you're gonna take all this medication and you're gonna get rid of it, right? It's learning how to dance with the rhythm that you're given. And so, and that's why I say it's a natural response.
Thank you. Thank you. That's probably the most simplified explanation I've ever heard. I want to talk a little bit about, I guess the type of losses too, right? Because sometimes we grieve over, people, our loved ones, but then at times we might be walking away from a business venture that we invested so much time and money in. And we're grieving, right? Like in a sense, it's a loss. It's you have to let go and you have to move on. It's kind of the same painful experience. And don't get me wrong, I'm not I'm not comparing it to obviously a loss of life. That's the most important thing in life. But I would love to kind of dabble about the type of different losses.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like you said, all different types of losses, right? We have the loss of a loved one, whether it's anticipated or just, randomly occurs, right? Unanticipated, unexpected. And this could be a death of a loved one, right? Either due to illness or suicide, or it could be, divorce or a breakup, or we've been friends with someone for, thousands of years, and now that friendship has ruptured, right? We've shared our heart and soul with this person, and now they're suddenly gone from our lives. We've, brought pets into our homes, and we loved and cared for them dearly, and now either we have to rehome them for whatever reason, or that they've died. Or like you said, it's the financial losses, right? I've invested all this amount of money into a business venture and it went downside, or I've lost my job and I don't know how to make ends meet, or housing is another big one in which we've moved, we've relocated. For me personally, it's the immigrant journey. I was very, very young when I, immigrated to the US with my family. But it's leaving motherland behind, right? And so that can result in a lot of grief as well. And the bankruptcies, and then you have, those various illnesses and infertility, right? For individuals who want to become parents. And for years and years and years, they've tried and it's not working, right? They're not accomplishing their heart's most valuable desire. So that goes out the door and that results in a lot of grief. And then really what this pandemic has brought to light is all the grief and all that was no longer is, right? Like we don't know what normal looks like anymore, right? I just got off a call with someone who's like, well, I haven't been to a physical office or a job in like 4 years. I don't know what working in the office looks like, right? And so loss of normalcy, which not knowing what to expect, often in the grief world we call it disenfranchised grief because society may not see it as important as the loss of an individual, right? But depending on what meaning that loss held for us, it can be as impactful and detrimental. And so we always have to give ourselves the opportunity to process it and to come to terms with it, right? And so we should not be disenfranchising it because it can hold a lot of value and importance in our life.
So talking about processing, my daughter, when my dad passed away, my daughter was very attached to my dad, very. And I would say she took it as hard as I did when we lost my dad. And sorry, it's so hard for me to speak about it because it's one thing for me to go through the pain and talk about it, but then when I remember how hard it was for my daughter, who at the time was she was around 10, 11. She was very young. She was talking to me about, and she still grieves him, and it's, she still, you know, tears up every time she talks about my dad. Sure. And I think it was a few months ago, she told me, she said, "Mom, did you know that there's 5 stages of grief?" And I was like, oh. I was like, "What? Why didn't you tell me this sooner?" And she started going through the stages, and I was just like, I wish I knew. So I want you to share that with the listeners, because I really do truly think that if I had known about the stages, at least I would have anticipated and be prepared to go through these crazy cycles of things, a grieving cycle, you know. And, you know, just if you can share that, please. I'm just going to stop at that.
Oh my gosh, I'm here chuckling because I don't follow the 5 stages whatsoever. And so in fact, you know, if I hear someone say
debunking it. That's right. Yes, debunk it.
I debunk it. And I'm here thinking, "Oh, I'm so glad you didn't hear about the 5 stages because
good. Good. See? No, we don't know. And this is why we need professionals like you to tell us and help us through, because the information that we're getting online and everywhere else, a lot of it is not right.
It's, you know what it is, Maria John, it's that it's outdated, right? And so debunking the 5 stages of grief, right? Like when I hear someone say 5 stages, I'm like, I'm going to go for the dang door. I do not want to hear the rest of it. It makes my skin crawl. But so like denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, like I went through it really quickly. And so, you know, when you hear grief, that's all you hear, right? But Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who came up with the 5 stages of grief, right? Did this in the 1970s. And she wrote a book called Death and Dying. And so that's how she came up with the stages. And that's because she was, at the time, working with individuals who were and who had life-threatening illnesses and were anticipating their own death.
Oh,
yeah, I know, right? Talk about rough.
That's
in the 70s.
You would need the 5 stages in that case.
In that case, right? Because you have to really look at that particular setting and environment and context. Background, right? And then again, 70s, right? Yeah. So this is almost 50 years ago, give or take, right? And so things have changed significantly since, you know, the 1970s. And now we have theories, we have grief theories, thanks to incredible researchers who've done, you know, really good work around grief and really honed in on, wait a second, grief does not follow a particular path, right? It's not linear. There's not a particular cycle to it. There isn't an end date. And so whenever you hear a therapist or someone say they're grief informed, and then you hear the 5 stages,
run away.
Please go out the other way. Like, please.
I love it.
Wait. Because actually, no, you're not grief informed, right? And so I appreciate you for recognizing that you're trying to be, but that's not it, right? We have the dual process model. We have the 5 stages of mourning with Warden. We just have so many that we have the 2-track model of grief and bereavement. We just have so many different theorists who've done way more, you know, updated things and can really resonate with life today. And so, you know, so it's okay if you don't remember, you know, the 5 stages. Good, I'm glad.
Good. Well, you know, this is why I couldn't wait to get you on the show, because there's so much that, you know, we think we know by Googling or now ChatGPTing, but a lot of information out there is outdated, clearly. And probably. And we're all different human beings, and at different stages, we need different type of things. And there's no cookie cutter formula, I'm assuming. So.
Exactly. And I love that you mentioned that, because that could not be truer for grief. Like, I do this work day in and day out, right? And I can't begin to tell you how one client is so different than the other, right? There are some similar symptoms that we'll get into, things to look out for, but really there is no guidebook, right? Or there is no formula like you have in chemistry or math. It really isn't. Like, our grief experiences are so unique to us, right? And they have an encrypted coding, like our DNA, you know, how each of our DNAs are just so different and make us unique. That's the beauty of our grief as well, is that it's so incredibly unique to us and what we're experiencing.
In terms of children, going back to my daughter, who clearly read about the 5 steps, and now I have to go back and check and make sure she's not using it. But I know she's at a better place now. She's probably going to be upset that I'm talking about this, because it's so private for her. But how do I, as a parent, make sure that, you know, that she's over it, or not over it, but she's in a good place, she's in a healthy place, and she's no longer grieving.
Where the grief is not impacting her day to day, or not as intense. Okay. So the best thing you can do, and this is for anyone in the listeners, by the way, the best thing that you can do is to continue to talk about it. To talk about it. So if you remember a memory of your dad that just randomly, you know, because we get reminders from our day to day just out of thin air, right? What we see, what we taste, what we hear, what we listen, what we touch, anything can remind us of a loved one. And so when it does, to share that with her and to communicate that and have those conversations of, yeah, we might shed a tear or two, but, you know, those tears are trying to tell us something, right? They're trying to talk about all that love. And so why wouldn't we, you know, talk about all that love? Why would we stop talking about that love, right? And so whenever, you know, or now she's really not going to like me, because I know she's going to be applying to colleges soon, right? Yeah. And so what would grandpa say about you applying to colleges? What would he, how would he be, goodness, let's try that again. How would he be responding?
Yeah.
So what would his interaction be? And oh gosh, I bet he would be so incredibly proud of you, because I know I am, right? Yeah. So continuing that conversation, continuing that dialogue, and giving yourself and your daughter and your loved ones the space to be able to express that.
How important is it to seek therapy when someone's grieving?
That's a good question. So, you know, because everyone's grief looks so different, it's honestly hard to tell, right? The first year can probably look really wonky, and it's supposed to. And the second year might even be worse than the first. If it is, don't be alarmed, okay? However, there comes a fine line in which the grief is so intense that it's impacting your day-to-day. And now you're beginning to question, you know, whether you can get through the day, because it just seems impossible and unbearable, right? And then so if it is, that's, you know, when you go, you know, begin to look at, okay, what grief supports do I need? And like, because I said grief is such a natural response, you know, and earlier in our conversation, I don't want folks to immediately go, oh my gosh, then I have to like rush in and see a therapist immediately, right? Actually, like I'm gonna throw in some statistics for you. We see only about 25% of people that result in wanting to seek extra help, right? The other 75%, they're actually doing okay, believe it or not. Could they make themselves more comfortable? Sure. But it's not like on a needed basis, if that makes any sense.
Makes total sense. And it, would you say men grieve differently from women? Or
oh my goodness, yes. So men are going to grieve differently because, you know, a lot of cultures and, you know, societies and so on and so forth, you know, say that boys don't cry, right? So if that's the message that we're receiving, well, how are they going to show their grief, right? It's going to be different. Different cultures grieve different ways, you know, different ethnicities, religions. It really goes back to your roots and your identity and, you know, what you've seen in your environment and, you know, what your current society looks like, and so on and so forth. So everyone, of course, is going to have a unique experience, right? And then some.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. You brought up some amazing points. What are some do's and don'ts in grief? Are there any?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, the do's and don'ts is what I love. So again, like I was saying, conversations with your daughter, right? The best thing that you can do is just to support. Like, tell me more about your loved one, right? What was their favorite food? What do they like to do? You know, what reminds you of them? And when we say tell me more, what I love most about individuals that are grieving is that they have their BS meters on, right? They've experienced enough world to know who is authentic and who is not. Mm-hmm. And so try to be as authentic as possible, right? If you cannot be, and if it's too much for you, then just don't, you know? If you can't show up as your authentic self and you don't know how to support, then just don't. Just don't say anything. Like, that's the best thing. But if it truly means a lot to you, then be authentic, be patient, be mindful.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.